This is Scott Beck with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by the brilliant Naya Keyhaes. Naya is a principal in the Ambulatory Surgery Center ASC practice leader at ECG. ECG is an elite consulting firm in healthcare, a brilliant team and group. We're going to talk to Naya about surgery centers today, how hospitals view it, key implications of the Medicare 2021 rule changes on ASCs, and a lot more. Naya, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been in my current role with ECG for 5 years and it has been absolutely a spectacular experience to be able to lead ECG in the ASC space and work with the whole group on a national basis, which has allowed us to really expand our capabilities in the ASC space with respect to relationships with hospitals and health systems and private equity firms and other key players and stakeholders that have really become more involved, you know, in the ASC space. We cover all aspects of the ambulatory surgery business in the practice. I've been fortunate, obviously, to be in consulting for about 25 years now, having, you know, owned Avea and now becoming the practice of ECG, but have, you know, really seen, as I thought, the ASC arena changed significantly in the last 5 years. And I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be very progressive and a lot of opportunity in the ASC space.
Thank you. And we're going to talk about a number of things. We'll talk about sort of opportunities for ASCs, cases migrating to ASCs. We'll also talk about hospitals and how they interact with ASCs. And we'll also talk about Medicare changes. Talk for a second first about the implications of Medicare 2021. Rule changes on ASCs?
Well, there's a couple of key factors, you know, in these final rules that just came out. And a couple of the biggest areas I'd like to discuss are the new codes that have been added to the ASC list. There were 11 codes specifically, but then additionally, there's another 267 codes that were added as a result of the rule changes. Specifically to note are codes like total hip and actually the hemi shoulder that were added to the list, as well as there are quite a few hysterectomy codes and some codes that I would identify that are definitely opportunities for migration from hospital to ASC setting. And I think what you can really see from the rule changes with respect to the code list is that, you know, Medicare is creating more opportunity for surgery centers to do more. Along the same line is the elimination of the inpatient only list over the next 3 years. When you look at that rule change, that's another, I think it's about 1,700 codes that would come off of the inpatient only list, not necessarily mean that they all go to the ASC list, but go to the HOPD list. And then I would expect us to see some coming over the ASC list in the future. But again, the spirit of it is that these procedures can be done in the outpatient setting. That is a very, very telling element in the rules that again, supports additional migration from inpatient to outpatient, whether it's HOPD or ASC. Again, just the whole outpatient push for surgery and reducing the total cost of care, which is greatly impacted from surgery migration. Those are probably two of the biggest areas with respect to the code list and the rule changes and the fact that the ASC update was, again, similar or the same as HOPD and overall is 2.4% based upon the hospital market basket, which then, you know, aligns and the consistency with the update factor has been something that, you know, was accomplished a few years ago and is consistent, you know, in moving forward to keep that hospital market update factor the same on ASC as it is for HOPD. I just really feel the fundamental takeaway of some of the key areas in the rule changes are pushing and supporting site of service, reduced cost, and migration of surgery.
Now, let me ask you a question. As you see these changes in Medicare, you see this out-migration, what do you look at and think of as the big opportunities for surgery centers?
Well, you know, clearly it provides surgery centers with the opportunity to expand services, whether it's capturing more volume from existing users due to, you know, further approvals on the list. It also provides momentum for commercial payers to do more with ASCs. I also have seen a lot of progression occur because of COVID, which has absolutely impacted surgery centers to partner and do more with hospitals to take on more volume. I think that's going to stay. The commercial payers have, from our experience, have been incredibly supportive of ASCs in restructuring contracts so that they can move volume. So if their payer contracts are not set up to do these cases, we've seen commercial payers to be fast, you know, faster than they normally are, very responsive, and setting up and restructuring contracts so ASCs can do these cases.
And talk a little bit about how are hospitals thinking about these issues and looking at site of service planning. At one point, they tried to do more and more within the hospital four walls. Then they tried to move things to hospital outpatient departments, so they got paid well. How do they look at things versus hospital outpatient departments versus surgery centers versus the four walls? How are they looking at site of service planning?
I think hospitals are, their awareness and their attention to it has heightened immensely in the last year. And I think it will continue to progress. If it doesn't, I think that hospitals are, who are astute, are identifying and wanting to understand what their risk is for migration. And if they are going to have a substantial risk for migration, which most do, how do they align and work in that outpatient space? So some of the things that we are seeing hospitals do is look at their entire book of business, surgical business, what site of service they are performing it right now. So if cardiology, you know, is in the hospital with all the, you know, CMS changes for the ASC list and also OBL, the office-based lab, that is definitely an area that I see is being looked at separately. And then GI endoscopy, other procedural cases like pain management that are still being performed in hospitals versus truly what, you know, what's going to stay in the inpatient setting in the next 5 to 10 years versus what would be in that HOPD setting. And if they're in a state that has implemented extended recovery care laws, those questions go even deeper. Because the risk is greater. So if you've got a state like Oregon, which is now allowing you to go to 48 hours, you know, we're seeing more attention being paid to what happens with that tranche of cases today that's going to happen in the future. And we've got hospitals that are very, very, they're looking at this tremendously. They're understanding that they have a significant amount of surgery that's at risk. And they're also looking at their ASC partnership opportunities, either, you know, with their own book of business decanting versus picking up incremental access to new partnerships that might offer them accretive value to offset some of the losses. One of the things that I think is really interesting is in doing quite a few analyses on hospitals and site of service in surgery, is that many of them commingle inpatient with outpatient. That causes inefficiencies in the health system. And I think that there is a lot more attention to, you know, how do I make the hospital more efficient? Because that's affecting their backlog of patients. And if I'm doing a traditional ASC type case in the hospital, but I have a backlog of higher acuity cases that can be performed in the hospital, how should they think about that from a planning standpoint in the future? And, you know, how many ASCs should they have versus a freestanding HOPD that's maybe functioning like an ASC, but has broader extended recovery care versus just using an ASC for same day surgery. They're looking at all of this now, all of the different sites of service across all service lines. And many are asking, you know, what's the 5 to 10 year outlook? What should my inventory of ORs be based upon site of service and licensure, as well as obviously impacted by CON, depending upon your state? It's been a pretty interesting year.
Yeah, no, very much so.
What about hospitals? Are hospitals looking to expand their footprint in the ASC space? Are hospitals employed physicians increasing the relation of ASCs? What's the interplay there between hospitals and ASCs?
Absolutely. Hospitals are absolutely looking at if they're not, if they don't have ASCs, what's their ASC plan? If they have ASCs, how should they be structured in the future? You know, should they be continue? A lot of them have minority interests in ASCs, and where as they see the risk of migration and decanting volume, and not only losing the value just from the departure of those cases, if they have a lower equity position, they're looking to increase their equity positions because they know there's more at risk. So I think you're going to see the structure of ASC hospital JVs change quite a bit. We're also seeing a lot of hospitals looking at their employed physicians and owning an ASC 100% with no joint venture, but having their employed physicians use it and developing, you know, as part of their physician comp plan, incentives for, you know, for lowering the cost of care and then rolling that into value-based contracting with payers. So that's another theme that we're seeing. And I think we'll see that continue to ramp up in the here in the near future.
Fantastic. And then, Naya, talk for a moment about total joints, knees, hips, also the movement of cardiology. What does these mean? What does this mean for ASCs, and how is it impacting ASCs and hospitals?
The total knees and total hips, and now actually it'll be interesting to see because the partial shoulder is on the proposed or the final rules here for ASCs, not total shoulder, but partial as well. First of all, what's really important to think about is that total joints are dominated by the Medicare population. So when you do these evaluations and you look at, you know, the history in hospitals, because even though some ASCs have been doing total joints and commercial payers up until 2020, the abundance of the volume is in the Medicare population. It's typically 60 to 70% of the volume is in the Medicare population. So the Medicare rule change is huge. It's a really big implication on ASCs and hospitals. And one of the things that, you know, we can't negotiate with Medicare. So obviously there's a couple of things that ASCs have to think about and are thinking about with respect to migration. You know, what is really the macroeconomics of that book of business? If I'm 60-40, so 60% Medicare and 40% commercial, and I allow all of that business through the door, looking at what the value of that book of business is for a day, because I can allow the surgeon now to book their whole case, and I'm not restricted due to the CMS rules, which are now allow us to do that there. If ASCs choose, or they are not, maybe from a cost standpoint, they have cost limitations from doing some of the government patients, they most likely will lose the commercial patients as well, because the surgeon's practice patterns are, you know, going to want to book a whole day. So looking at the economics of what that total joint surgeon is worth in a whole day across all payers is really important, and understanding their cost. Their volume will, you know, as the volume goes up, their cost is expected to go down, obviously just from basic economics. But also we have seen total knees since in 2020, before and after COVID. We have done a couple of analyses on ASCs in health systems. In one ASC, we saw them doing, I don't know, 3 to 5 total joints per month before COVID. Then COVID shuts the ASCs down and shuts the hospitals down for elective surgery. They come back online in May, and by July and August, they were doing over 40 total joints a month. That was incredible to me. And this was one experience, but I know that there are other ASCs that we have reporting similar uptick. We have another ASC that the hospital has notified them due to research in their market of COVID, that the hospital is at risk to shut down elective total joints. So the ASC has accelerated the implementation of their total joint program. And we, our group, helped them with putting contracts and actually helped them with some operational modifications to be able to accelerate the total joint program so that they can move forward as quickly as possible in 2021. And I know now that the HIPS just got approved, that's going to add more volume, you know, when the ASCs are playing that role. And a lot of them are partnering, you know, with the hospitals in the local community because of COVID. And we're seeing a what I would have expected momentum for ramp up to take a lot longer. We're seeing COVID accelerate that. But certainly ASCs have some very definitive, you know, policies that they need to think about. And, you know, what is the ASC eligible criteria for the total joint patient? We see ASCs, you know, looking at, you know, further at allowing more ASA level 3 cases through the door, but that's by clinical indication and careful review. But we also see them, you know, looking at age-specific, you know, criteria. So you know, the ASCs that we've been working with that are moving the total joints certainly have a clinical protocol process in place. And it'll be interesting to see what those volumes look like, you know, at the end of, you know, going into 2021. But obviously, you know, 2020, we'll see gaps because of the closing of elective surgery and ASCs and both hospitals. So it's total joints, I think, is going to see incredible momentum into the ASC setting.
And fixing your point on that, that a lot of that's Medicare business, just because a lot of those total joints are Medicare age and above. And thank you. And talk about surgery centers and migrating surgery. Any advice on key thoughts on optimizing the opportunity to migrate services from hospitals to surgery centers?
Yeah, I think, one, it's incredibly obviously important to understand what your cost is if it's a new service line, of adding that new service and getting ahead of it with your commercial payers. If your commercial payer contracts are not set up to do some of these new cases, don't do them and then ask for the rate increase that you need after the fact, because then you're in the payer's budget and you may not have as much opportunity to restructure those contracts the way you need them to be restructured, because some of these cases are very expensive. They may require capital expenditures if you're doing total joints with robots, or, you know, taking on cardiology. You know, that's a whole different evaluation as well, because what we're, and to answer your other question, Scott, on cardiology, what we're seeing with cardiology is obviously these patients have higher comorbidities. And the physical location of the ASC is pretty critical to the volume analysis on cardiology. If the ASC is physically located inside the walls of a hospital, which we have seen some ASCs, like within the walls of a hospital, we see that migration factor to be higher versus if they're literally in the parking lot of the hospital. We don't see the migration factor as high, other than diagnostic and things like pacemakers and monitors, because the cardiologist is, and the comorbidities of that patient, they have to be able to rescue that patient if something were to happen. And so we see the proximity of the ASC relative to the opportunity for migration to go hand in hand on cardiology, but that also impacts, you know, what does the ASC have to think about when they're planning for, you know, these types of cases, and really understanding and talking to the surgeons, don't just look at the ASC list, you know, understanding what really is the opportunity for migration, factoring comorbidities and these other clinical indications.
Naya, always brilliant to talk to you. We've touched on a number of different subjects, a lot of it related to hospital migration of cases to surgery centers, how hospitals plan for the cases should be at, what's going on with total joints, cardiology, and movement there of cases, and what ASC should be thinking about. Naya, how does people learn more about you and ECG? You're a brilliant resource. I know a Yale graduate and over-the-top bright and a great, great professional, a conscientious professional. Tell us a little bit about how people find Naya Kihase to work with you.
Sure, absolutely. You know, anyone is welcome to reach out to me via email at nkehayes@ecgmc.com. There's also information on the ASC practice on the ECG website at ecgmc.com, that they could find a lot of information both about the practice and the firm there. And I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody, you know, wants to reach out to me directly. It'd be great to connect. You know, and lots going on. And I think that our world is changing pretty significantly over, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of changes in ambulatory surgery in the next 5 to 10 years, both ASC and HOPD, and I think has a lot of implications for future planning for those who are haven't looked at their outpatient volume. It's a pretty high priority for looking at what's at risk and or opportunity if you've got backlog of cases that you can't do. You know, in a hospital, that's the other thing that we run into, Scott, is there's a backlog of cases. Maybe an ASC, you know, and having that plan sooner rather than later is the solution because it'll allow more, you know, if there's backlog.
Fantastic. I want to thank you, Naya, for joining us. Always great to visit with you. Thank you very much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Thanks, Scott.